Testing, testing, 1, 2, 3.
Microphone check, 1, 2, what is this?
This is the Nerdy Legion Podcast with your Nick Whitmore.
Hello.
Oh, hello, oh. Caller.
Well, hello, caller. What can we help
you with?
Did I get
the right number? Did I win a prize? Am I the fifth caller?
You win 30 free seconds on Miss Cleo's hotline.
Yes. That's sexy time right there.
Well, come on. Let me tell you your future.
Where's the sex talk?
You called the wrong line.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, you got to call 1-999-NICK-WETMORE and you get the sexy talk.
Okay.
Not the sexy voice, just the talk.
Yeah, just the talk.
Just the talk. Well, it's easier that way. It's natural.
If you hear any wicka, 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 that's Nick's penis rubbing on the microphone.
Okay.
Or on the record. I got to let it drop.
Yeah, oh, my God.
Scratch the record.
Yep. And then you got to drop the beat.
Uh-huh. Drop the meat. Oh, episode title.
Oh.
We did it. We can finish
too
now.
Too early.
No.
Luckily, none of this is recorded.
Yeah.
You're not eating meat.
Well, I'm eating fish.
Oh, yeah. I guess that's a meat.
It's kind of a meat.
You're turning into a Bill Bomer, man. You
Listen,
must have been.
I want to be a Wonderland.
Heavily. Your body's a Wonderland. You want to be a Wonderland. You'll be sipping tea pretty soon.
I am sipping tea.
From a little cup.
Last week he was sucking on a chili dog outside the Tasty Freeze, but this week Chris and Bill have tickled his ears too much. Now he's headed off to Bill Land.
Yeah, that mm-hmm. means that I'm going to have to be a podcast partner with you now.
Oh, finally.
Because you know what I do is I get these vegans on because they eat well. And then when the apocalypse happens, I'm going to eat them. As a beef.
Mm-hmm. Well, there won't be much beef.
It's grass-fed.
I mean, if the apocalypse
it's
happens
there's
now...
There's not, when you barbecue them, you don't have these, like, chunks of fat, you know, you have to cut away. You just, it's lean meat.
Lean beef.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. No, my doctor yelled at me, so I figured I'd make some life changes.
Cholesterol.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Is it a hereditary cholesterol, or is it just because you're eating bad?
No, I'm just eating bad. And it's not cholesterol. I've got circulation problems.
Oh.
In particular in my legs. And so...
They go to sleep a lot?
No, they don't. But my right leg is always swollen. It hasn't been this week, though. Because they gave me some compression socks. So I'm wearing pantyhose every day.
Oh, that's sexy.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Little garter belt there.
Well, I got to wear that in August. So I got to wear these compression socks till August, and then I'm going to have surgery. And then after that, I got to wear my garter belt for like 9 weeks after that, and then I'll be good to go.
Ah.
Are you getting the Cher surgery where she took out two ribs?
I thought that was Marilyn Manson.
That too.
He did it for different reasons.
Now, Martin, did you make too many runs for the border? Did you finally mess up to the doctor that you're eating
so
an incredible...
Nacho fries, man.
Yeah.
Yep. That did it.
Yep. Can't do it no more.
Too many Superman burritos and Incredible Hulk gorditas.
Well, you know, it's tough, right? I mean, Mike, you work a lot of hours. I don't know. I'm sure Barb, like, feeds you well before you head out. But my wife can't cook. You know, I do all the cooking in the house.
Yeah.
And when you're working, like, 12, 14, 16 hours in a day, like, there's no time to cook. So I just,
right.
like, run down to McDonald's or Taco Bell and get whatever.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
I'm lucky Barb will have something ready for me. Sometimes I eat really late, though, like, 8 o'clock. But it's
oh,
usually...
Yeah.
Good meal.
I'll do that too, and she yells
then,
at me.
But then
she...
I eat and I want to pass out.
Yeah, my wife doesn't like me eating late. She's like, you can't eat so late. You're supposed to be sleeping already. Like, if you eat, you're going to get fatter. And I'm like, ah, damn it.
So you have to force yourself to stay up at least 1 hour.
Yeah. Well, I usually don't eat breakfast, so I'm trying to change that too, right? Like, I'm trying to get up a little bit earlier so I have time to eat and, like, make my meal for the day. And it's been working out pretty good this week.
Yeah.
That sounds like that's really cutting into your masturbation time, and I don't approve that.
Oh, there is always time for that, my friend.
Yeah. Circulation. You got to keep the circulation going.
That's right.
Yeah.
How am I going to improve my circulation?
Yeah. You got to put on the garters and those compression undies. So you'll be all set.
When I was watching Infinity War, that's what I thought of. I thought of Bruce Banner was getting too old, so he needed a shot of Viagra, and he didn't get it.
Oh, I thought you were talking. You were thinking about my garter belt.
I thought you were saying when you were watching Infinity War, you kept thinking that you have to masturbate.
No, I didn't.
Only when ScarJo's on screen.
She's amazing. She's in my top five for sure.
I agree.
Wow.
She's hot, man.
But she is.
That Scarlet Witch is, ever since Wind River, man, I'm really attracted to her.
Same here, Mike. Oh, I'm telling you.
She's got something going on. And when she does that accent, Scarlet Witch, I'm like, oh, yeah.
Well, she doesn't always have the accent, though.
Yeah, I know she doesn't, but it's a turn on.
I hear you. Maybe you just need a Russian bride.
Slavic accent, you know.
Yeah.
Oh.
I dated some Ukrainians back in my day. They were not strippers before anybody says anything.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. They
the
were
strippers.
Yeah. That never happened. That whole episode was bullshit. I lied the entire time. None of that ever happened. Yeah. Well, you know, I gotta preface that. Apparently, my oldest daughter's friends are listening to this podcast now.
Oh my god, Nelson, you can listen to this. Kids, get off of it.
Worlds are colliding.
It's not rated E for everyone. That E's for explicit. Get out of here.
Yep. Got to be careful. Yeah.
You know, I was reading Infinity. The Infinity Watch, Warlock and the Infinity Watch. And I was thinking, man, they should really do a moon dragon in one of the movies because, man, that outfit is hot. It's smoking hot.
Maybe that's why they haven't put Warlock in there yet. They're not ready.
They can't figure out his outfit.
Yeah, they're not ready to go full 70s yet.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe soon.
Well, he's got a pretty cool outfit in the 80s or the 90s.
I like the one he's got in Countdown, Infinity Countdown.
Yeah, that's decent. I like the one in the 90s, actually. That's the one I prefer with the big flowing cape. And
yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
With that sweet perm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's really a fascinating character. I mean, that whole band of misfits is really interesting.
Especially when they go on to, what is it, Mole Island?
Yeah, Monster Island.
Monster Island, there you go.
Yeah, because Mole Man's lonely.
Yeah.
Mole Man's lonely, and he's like, hey, why don't you come down here and keep me company, guys?
Maybe Mole Man should call 1-900 Nick Wetmore.
That's what he should.
Mm-hmm. I
always feel sympathetic towards that guy. I really do. I feel like he's alone. Like, he's just a lonely dude. Because those moloids are not good company. They're more like slaves to him.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's got those huge monsters, and they just destroy stuff. He's got, like, nobody to shoot the shit with.
So sometimes he just goes against Fantastic Four just to have something to do? Is that what you're...
Yeah, I feel bad for him, though. I really do. He's a very sympathetic dude.
Mm-hmm.
Are you sympathetic towards the Joker?
No, because that guy's a killer, man.
Yeah.
Especially in that 25-cent comic book. Holy crap.
Yeah.
I mean, that guy did nothing to him, man. But it was a fascinating conversation.
It was really good. I was very surprised.
Yeah, it flowed well. I was like, who wrote this again? He didn't repeat all these words over and over again. I was like, who wrote this?
Yeah,
was this Bendis? Did Bendis arrive? What happened?
Instead of repeating phrases, he just repeated the letter slot.
Yeah.
So that probably didn't get to you as much.
I liked that issue a lot, and it. I don't know. I think about it a lot because it's pretty deep. Like somebody was having a conversation with me on Twitter, and he's a teacher, and I've never talked to this guy before, but he's like, they don't send letters like that from a school, and it really bothered me. I'm like, okay,
well,
but I don't.
We get those letters.
Do you really?
Yeah, we get them.
Saying, hey, you're. Why would they use a letter system this day and pay for postage when they can just pick up the phone and leave a message with the parents?
Well, I don't know. I mean, now it might be through the app, but I remember a couple years ago we got a letter.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because Reagan was out. She had a couple health issues, so she was going to the doctor a couple times. And they're like, listen, you know, she's got to be at school on time. Like, here's your warning letter.
Mm-hmm.
We're like, all right, wow. Whatever, douche.
Well, that's what it was. It was a warning letter.
Yep.
Yeah.
Which, and then did the truant officer chase her and a band of misfits around? or am I just thinking a Little Rascal?
I love the Little Rascals, man.
Of course you did.
Matter of fact, I was just, I mean, this is the 25 cent issue connection, because Perry White was Jackie in the Little Rascals.
Mm-hmm.
And that... when they had Jackie and Chubby and all those that one group of Little Rascals, which was after Alfalfa and them, mm-hmm. that's when they really had the Miss Crabtree thing going.
Oh yeah,
like they were all over Miss Crabtree. And I remember going on these family vacations with my parents, and we never had money to stay at a hotel, so we would stay at KOA camps. And at KOA camps, like at 8 o'clock, they'd always have this like reel to reel projector. They'd pop out and they'd show like Little Rascals or Laurel and Hardy. And I just wow. I loved it. You'd be sitting there outside watching on a projector on a white screen, just old stuff. But I really like Little Rascals. They're amazing.
Yeah, those are good memories.
I actually thought about you guys when I was reading that book. I assume that was your favorite story, right? You both read it.
The Perry White one I love.
Yeah.
Yeah, for me.
I loved it because it was channeling, like, just Great Caesar's ghost, Perry White. Like, get on it, you know? Take the office. I just loved it. I was actually picturing the Jackie that was playing him in Superman the movie. I kept on hearing that voice in my head because he had a lot of dialogue.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, it was just great to see that relationship. That definitely was my top story in that DC Nation for sure.
Yeah,
followed by the unexpected preview.
I didn't get that. That must be in the free the digital version.
Yep.
Yeah,
that was fantastic. Looking forward to June.
Yeah,
I thought the
good.
Justice League was a hot mess, though.
It was bad.
Like, there was, like, nothing to latch onto at all.
Nope. And they were forcing the names of all of the teams down your throat.
Yeah, yep. It was like, here's Team Wonder, and then here's all their little descriptions. That's all it was. Mm-hmm. It was like a little introduction to the teams, and then they had, like, those celestial beings at the end, and... they've already had that story. I mean, Hitch told that kind of stuff.
Yep.
So it's like, tell me something different.
Damn,
I got
hadn't
excited
even thought about
when
Hitch.
They had Kalu.
Well, I was always worried about the team dynamic, because a lot of those characters, I mean, they're cool as hell, but they don't have like this historical dynamic with each other. It's just an odd group.
I think that's the point, though, is they want to do that. But my issue with it is, after the whole metal thing, I think having some kind of boundaries really helps. And when you start having bigger and badder villains, like, shit just goes off the rails. You know what I mean? And if they had some limitation, which they've always had, then it's up to the writer to just tell a good story. Now it's just like, well, how much bigger and badder can we get? And, you know, at one point, will there be nothing bigger and badder than whatever that villain is?
Well, I just wish they would not do those many stories back to back to back. I'd like to see somebody destroy him from within. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, manipulate him and destroy him and make them hate one another and do something. Like, just infiltrate them and have some kind of injustice story, but have it real subtle and grow it as you're telling other stories, and then all of a sudden that's your main plot point. That's what I miss about comics today. They're only focused on one plot point and one 6-issue arc. Back in the day when you had 3 simultaneous threads going on, it really was awesome. I love that type of storytelling.
Yeah, that's a work of art for sure to do that.
Yeah, but they all knew how to do it. I mean, DeFalco was a master at that, man. I mean, he'd have so many threads in there. I was like, you never knew what you were going to get.
Yeah, Claremont did it pretty well as too.
Yeah,
they. I like the way they just, one's in the beginning, one's in the middle, and one's in the end. And then it just starts over again, repeat.
Yep.
But there's always a thread. There's always, like, relationships being developed. Because you can't always have, like, a fist fight, pow bang, and keep your attention. There has to be something else going on.
Yeah, sometimes Jubilee has to take the mutants out shopping at a mall.
That's right.
They have to do that.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
In your yellow jacket.
Mm-hmm. They need to go to the karaoke bar with Dazzler.
But getting back to the Perry White, just to have Clark, I love the internal dialogue of Clark. I love him taking Perry as a parental guide, as well as, like, I'm going to check Perry's blood pressure and heart rate right now. Like, it's the simple stuff like that. It's like, you know what? You don't even have to go outside the Daily Planet. Like, just that story doesn't have to have fist fights. That was really I thought the entire story was really interesting up until the last page. And then I was like, oh, God. Like, come on.
Well, it is kind of interesting, though, I think, because it reminds me of Superman 4.
I just would rather like a new reporter. Like, if she's investigating Clark because she thinks Clark's Superman, that's interesting enough. But for her to be working with whoever it is, the mafioso, whoever, like, I don't need her to be bad. Like, just, yeah, I'll take the new character. It's interesting.
Probably Inner Gang. Probably bringing back Inner Gang and infiltrating the Daily Planet.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
But boy, that artwork's fantastic.
Yeah, Garcia Lopez.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It does look better on old paper, though. Like, when they do glossy lines, it's just a thicker line. When you see, like, older comics with Garcia Lopez, it just looks like the art pops more.
That especially that DC Nation, like, that's a good point, Mike. Oh, and by the way, our guest on the Comfy Couch, Mike Myers, from his plethora of podcasts. Sorry, yeah. we're 40 minutes in and we're not even introducing our guest. Oh, my God.
Introduce me and see if anybody can guess. they win a prize.
But it is interesting, like, I would have loved DC to put that out. And sure, it was, what, a quarter or whatever it was. Like, put it out on, like, the old print, the old paper.
Yeah.
Martin and I had this conversation. Like, just bring back the old newsprint. Like, it doesn't need to last for 100 years, and that's why we're putting it on this sweet-ass paper. Like, if you want to offer something for a quarter, no one's going to balk that it's on the cheap paper. And guess what?
Yeah.
Garcia Lopez would look pretty sweet on that cheap paper.
Well, you know which paper I'm falling in love with right now is Black Mask. They're using, like, this matte.
Yeah.
Which is, it's not a gloss. It's like a matte. And it just makes things pop. It's really awesome. So, like, if they were to go to a paper, I prefer what they're doing with that. I love, like, what Alterna has, the newsprint, though. Although their artists aren't all that great yet. So the art doesn't pop on that paper. I love the chair, but the chair is so dark that it's one of those books that it won't last good on newsprint. Because do you remember in the 90s when it didn't get gloss yet and they had, like, those dark ads, and then you turn the page and then, like, 10 years later you take out your comic books and that ink bled over?
Mm-hmm.
You mean like that Dungeons and Dragons?
Yeah.
Or like the Nintendo ads?
Sure. Yeah, it would bleed. The ink would bleed.
Yeah. And you look at it 10 years later and all it is like just a huge, like, half the page is just black with a very faint red dragon in the middle of it.
Yeah.
Very strange.
Like, what is this cool dragon doing in this story? Where'd it come?
Oh, shit. Yeah. Those Black Mask books are good, dude. I know you were confused with that Come Into Me. Did you read the new one, Mike?
No, I haven't yet.
Okay.
I'm in a different... Every week something changes with me. I can't keep my focus. I honestly can't.
What's your focus now?
Yeah, I was going to say, what brought you to Infinity?
exhaustion. Exhaustion and having Marvel Unlimited.
I was like,
hey, I haven't visited this in a while. And then I went down that rabbit hole and I was like, I really like these characters. I really want to read more. And then I was like, damn it. It crosses over with Infinity War. And I was like, I didn't want to get into Infinity War, but I did anyway. But I wanted just to keep reading the Warlock and the Infinity Watch. And I kept going. Now I'm reading that. And then I just coincidentally popped out Avengers Ultra Force and there was Infinity Gems in it. And I was like, oh, this is badass. Because they got the Grandmaster and Loki playing like a contest of champions. And just like they're doing in No Surrender. And that was one of my first events that wasn't really an event. It was only like a 3-issue arc. And it came out around the time where I was buying like tons of comics. And Contest of Champions was, I don't know, came out around the time I think that like Hercules miniseries came out and Wolverine Claremont or Brett Miller came out. And it was just awesome because I was like, oh, they have this Ireland chick. Who's she? You know, like they had a guy on a carpet that looks like Sinbad. They had people from every country in this contest of champions trying to find these artifacts. And I've always loved the elders. When you get the collector and the grandmaster, I get a kick out of them. And the titans too, like Star Fox and all that stuff. And then I love Ultra Force. So you threw an Ultra Force there. It's like the grandmaster says, I'll choose Ultra Force. And he says, Loki gets the Avengers. And then they all go head to head. It was really cool. And the one that I have to go to a long box and get the conclusion. I'll probably read that tonight. That one has Warren Ellis and George Perez. It's like a big team compared to the one that was on this.
Wow. That's a pretty good team.
Yeah. You can't go wrong there. So I'm really curious.
I don't think I read that. Let me put that on my list. This is the part of the show where Martin buys stuff.
Oh, we like that part. We like that part.
You said that was Contest by Ellis?
No, it's called it's just Avengers Ultra Force is the first one. And then the other one that Ellis writes is Ultra Force Avengers. So they switched the title. One's by Marvel and one's by Malibu. And Malibu got the good writers. I mean, the stronger.
Just like the Batman Shadow Batman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was the same writer for that. Orlando did both, I thought.
Oh, Ultraverse.
Switches.
No, I want to go read some Malibu.
Ooh.
Yeah, so it's weird. That's what it led me down. I just follow this trail, and I swear to God, I never know where I'm going to end up.
I love it.
Last week, I was on this trade thing. Like, I got like all this. I got pumped up because I finished an omnibus for the first time in my life. I finished like it's like 1,200 pages.
It's a big accomplishment.
And I was like, I finished it. I did it. Where's the next one? Ring it on.
Usually I need to take a step back for a couple of days. It's like, oh, I just need to decompress. I don't know where to go after I finish it.
And then I went into the Golden Age for a while. And one of the things that I was fascinated with is the sophistication of the stories. The Superman stories are so relevant in today's world. I mean, they're crazy relevant on what's happening.
So are you getting those from a trade?
Oh yeah. I have them in several formats, but I started reading the Superman 85 year hardcover that came out the same year that Action Comics 1000 came out.
Yeah.
And I realized I never read Action Comics number one. And I was like, how does that happen? How do I not read this? And I was like, I was blown away. I fell in love because what I didn't realize is when these guys started off, they were trying to make money going to a newspaper because that's where the money was.
Mm-hmm.
To be in the Sunday Funnies and to be in the Daily News Strip. So Action Comics number one reads like it's a news strip, like four panels and that's his origin. And then bang, you're off to something else. It is insanely crazy. And it's amazing the stuff that he does. Like it's just, it's insane. There's like four stories in there that happen like one of them, he just like flying this girl somewhere and she's all tied up and you're like, what is he flying this tied up girl? And then he shows up at like a governor's house and he's like, you got to stop this death sentence. That's somebody's going to get electrified and, you know, get murdered. And I guess some woman was going to get killed that day. And he found the real woman that committed the crime and flown her into the governor's office and said, don't kill this other woman. It was insane. And one of the things that's real prevalent, I guess I didn't realize that early on, the death sentence was really prevalent. Mm-hmm. Like it's in like four different action comics. And I was like, holy crap. I never had an idea it was happening that early. Like I knew in the West you'd have the hangman, right? I mean, you'd hang by the, I guess I just didn't realize we already had the electric chairs and we're electrifying people or doing the shots. Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
I always find it shocking. Like I just finished up Amazing Spider-Man Masterworks Volume 6.
Yeah.
And I was shocked that I never saw the cover to Amazing Spider-Man 61. I never ever, like all of my dealings with Spider-Man, flipping through multiple collections and especially ones that have like collages of covers, it's just a very simple cover, but I've never ever in my life saw it. So it's fascinating when you trip on something that you just assumed, you know, you're such a fan that you've seen everything, been there, done that. So it's shocking when all of a sudden something new is presented to you.
Oh, that is a nice cover. Mm-hmm. Oh, what a tangled web we weave.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen that cover either.
I was shocked from Masterworks. Like, I'm used to Romita, but this entire Masterworks Volume 6, a lot of it was like, you know, it was, of course, Romita, but then it's like embellished by Don Heck.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was really interesting because I remember Don Heck on his own, but I never knew he sort of backed up Romita. That was really fascinating to see. And then when you compare it to early Romita, when he first came on the book, it's like, yeah, there's a lot more Don Heck than I would even say Romita at this point.
Yeah.
Really fascinating. I would love to learn how that broke down.
I love when collected editions have the cover breaks. I hate it when they don't have the covers or when they put the cover in the back.
Yeah.
I do not like it. I want the cover where it's supposed to be. I want to see what was there.
I won't even forgive them if it's like five covers that are strung along to make one image. Like,
yeah.
Guess what? You could still have the cover where it's supposed to go and then in the back have all the covers aligned so we can see what the big widescreen picture is. That's
right.
Fine.
Yeah, I just want to know what the individual issue cover looked like. Just the mm-hmm. cover A. You can mm-hmm. you can put all the variants in the back. I want to know what it looked like. And that's what drives me crazy if you get like the Jim Aparo collected edition, because mm-hmm. they will not put the cover if Jim Aparo didn't draw it.
Yeah,
you'll have the Brave and the Bold, but if Jim Aparo didn't draw the cover, you don't have the cover. And I'm like, oh, it just gets me. Put the cover on there. Pay this family something and let's go.
I didn't know that those Brave and Bolds came out with no covers on them. That's shocking.
They came out with covers, but they weren't drawn by the artist.
Well, I don't know about that. As they try to rewrite history just a little bit. Oh, so frustrating.
Yeah, I love the cover break, too. Mm-hmm. I think it's because of the way I read. I read like, and I feel accomplished, like I completed an issue. Mm-hmm. And when it's just one big run-on of 1,000 pages, you don't feel like you accomplish it until the end.
Right. Heck, I hate to even say this because God forbid if Marvel or DC listens. The way to get me to rebuy something, especially physical media, just include the old letter columns.
Oh, yeah. They do that in the omnibuses.
I would be such a sucker for that I would be like, yep, now I have to go out and buy those.
Yeah. That's what I love about my database, too, because when I buy an old comic book, I'll always go, I put it in the database, I inventory it, and sometimes it'll say, Well, this one had a David Michelinie letter column in it. It's got a little note section, and it tells me who wrote letters. If they're big comic writers, and I'll always go into the issue and read the letter.
That's actually worth buying. That's really interesting. I would like to read those.
It is fascinating because you read those letters, and they're just like fans like us, and they just ended up being big writers later on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like lucky if they if they pursued their dream and now they're writing.
Crazy. So did watching Infinity War, did that inspire either of you to go onto a cosmic bent?
Yes.
Oh?
Not me. It was just coincidental.
No, I'm reading Annihilation again.
Ooh. Yeah, I saw that. That's good.
Yeah, it's great. Really event. It's still good, dude. It's like, I think, my third or fourth read through.
Yeah.
And it's still awesome every time.
Well, I think I don't treat it like an event because it's like an event within its own space opera.
Mm-hmm.
But it is better than 90% of Marvel events. Like I consider it more to be like a No Man's Land event or do you know what I mean?
Yes.
To take place in all the Bat books, or it's not like this company-wide event.
Yeah, an isolated event.
Yeah, and I think you or Ronnie asked me that question, and I was talking to myself on Mike M's, and I was like, you know what? I think most of my favorite events are isolated events. That's what I love, is the events that don't take place in every single book, but are in their own world, like in the Bat book or the Superman book or the space books. That's what I prefer. The company-wide ones are just too big. Like Identity Crisis, I love, and it didn't cross over with nothing but one book.
Right. It's the crossover events that you almost have to put in their own little category.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I am gearing up, and I don't know if you read my tweet. I am gearing up for my summer, because I always try to read something big over the summer. And I think it's going to be Infinite Crisis.
Oh!
Infinite Crisis, nice.
Yes, I've looked and I believe I own all the issues, so I just want to do, I want to jump all the way in.
So you're not doing No Man's Land anymore?
It wasn't voted on in the poll. So
that's right!
I can make a call.
I could never do that. I could never have anybody else decide my destiny.
Well, I'll be honest.
Because it would influence my enjoyment. It really would. Like my enjoyment is like, what's going to scratch my itch right now? Right now? What do I feel like? Do I feel like Planet of the Apes magazine? Yes. Planet of the Apes world.
But whenever I like choose what poll, because it's me choosing the four poll topics.
Yeah.
So already I'm invested in all four of those. So really, anyone that wins, anyone that loses, I will happily, those were pretty much
that's
the four that I was debating.
You for you, right.
Yeah.
You feel like.
Yeah. Mentally, I was ready for all four.
Yeah.
But like I told Martin, thank God No Man's Land didn't win, or it would be all six books, not just one, all six. So.
See, I was surprised because I thought you had read that.
No, never have. That was, buddy, everything that I've read this year, Contagion, like Nightfall last year, that was right around the time where all the Bat books started. They never, ever were separated. They went right in from one event into another event. So you had to own all of the Bat books to get the full story. And that's when I tapped out of Bat books.
Yeah, that was tough.
So all of these were, that's when I dropped it, right when everything started to interchange. And honest to God, the next time I went into Bat books, other than an individual issue here or there that attracted me in, like, Sean Phillips is doing this one-off. Okay, I'll jump in for that. Or like Legends of the Dark Knight, Grant Morrison. Yes, I'll read Gothic now. But other than that, I think it was Hush. That was the next thing that like actually brought me back into, it seems like Batman books aren't all intertwined with each other.
Yeah, I think that's why that book is so hot, because I think a lot of people are like you, where they dropped off with all the constant super long events.
It's expensive, but mm-hmm. the the con is it's so expensive and you have to be vested. The pro is story momentum because it's like pow, 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 pow. You don't wait.
Yeah, and that's really
if,
nice.
If you're a Wednesday warrior, it's the optimal situation because the momentum is there. It's like, I got to read this. I got to read this.
But that's why I dropped out of Spider-Man, too, because they started to do the same damn thing.
Yeah, the Clone Saga, I can't believe how long it is.
Yeah.
And I love the way they package that because it's out of order. It's like they'll put all the back matter that's not part of the main story in the back. You'll read it like it's one continuous flow of a story. And,
now, can I get really nitpicky with omnibuses?
Yeah.
And I would love to know you two's opinion on this. Because you definitely see it with, like, the Jim Aparo collection, or I've seen it in a few omnibuses where they'll include, like, Spectacular Spider-Man, whatever, 72. But they'll only include three pages that had to do with whatever, Clone Saga. But the rest of the book is just sort of tossed aside. They just won't include, like, the rest of the book because it had nothing to do with the actual, like, crossover event or whatever. Where, for me, I want to read the entire comic, not just an editor being like, put these four pages in there. It drives me crazy because I still want to read the entire issue.
Yeah, Nightfall was really bad with that because there's, like, five different versions of the Nightfall compendiums or what omnibuses, and they're all different. Yeah, I don't understand that. You think they'd want to, if you're doing an omnibus, you want to include the whole story.
I would think the more the page count, the more you can charge for it. Like, you're not saving anyone unless they just assume, well, there's 40 issues in this omnibus, so we're still charging. Well, not really when one of the issues are only three pages.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah, they did that in this Clone Saga where, I guess, when it kicked off, it was a backup in Amazing, Spectacular, and Web or something like that. And it was like only eight pages. So they didn't include the front matter of that issue. They kicked it off with each eight pages that started it off. But from a story perspective, I was okay with it. And then, like, if they do like a Brave and the Bold, I'm okay with them not having the 100-page giant with all the reprint and just having the main lead feature, like Batman teams up with X. I'm okay if it doesn't have all the other stuff. I mean, I prefer it have the other stuff, but in a collection, I'm okay.
Yeah, when you see the covers for those 100 pages and you look at, like, oh, there's an Aquaman story. Oh, there's a Hawkman story. And just the little circular picture of what's to be expected inside that book. Good God, don't show... At that point, I hate to say it, Mike, don't show me that cover because I really want to read that Aquaman story.
The only thing that's different, though, when you're looking at those particular issues is you have to jump time periods. You got to be willing to. Like, you got to be willing to be in the mood for a Silver Age and then a Golden Age because the reprints are usually from the Golden Age. So you're switching from, like, a 70s mode to a 1950s mode, and if your brain can do that on a, you know, just like on like that, it's okay. But if you want to be in the mood, like, because each decade is so different. I mean, it's just I can almost, like, go through every decade and pinpoint certain things that you could find consistently in every decade because I have read every decade now. So, if you can switch like that, it's good. But if you can't, it's a little, like, you could say, okay, I'm reading this and it's kind of lighthearted. It's a crazy Bob Haney story. And then all of a sudden you're reading a Golden Age Hawkman and you're like, it's really dense. But the art is, I mean, man, those Golden Age artists, man, holy crap. They are... Holy moly, but they're awesome. Like, that's what I'm learning to appreciate now more than anything is, like, the Golden Age art, because I just bought some Golden Age Blackhawk and I'm amazed, like, that the quality and the line work on that stuff, it's just amazing. Yeah, there's some really good artists during those time periods.
For sure. Yeah, I'm just starting to dip my toe in to Golden Age, so especially on some of these Comixology sales, it's really easy to just, well, what's $5? Yeah, I should buy that. I need to read that. And yeah, especially like hearing from you and Martin on when you're reading Bat books or, you know, Justice League books, and then I look at the covers and it is there, now there's something very attractive to it, and it, and I could care less like how different and jarring the storytelling is. It doesn't matter. I've certainly adapted to reading more and more of it and loving it more and more.
Well, for me, the, like, if you were to say what defines me, like what decade defines me in terms of artwork and storytelling, it's the Bronze Age for me, because that's when I got into it. That's when I, like, the images are ingrained in my head.
Mm-hmm.
And, it still is, like, even for the type of storytelling, the Bronze Age is, it's the age that I'll always prefer. But before recently, I've always thought Silver Age and then Golden Age. But now, in terms of artwork, I rather see the Golden Age artwork over the Silver Age artwork. And I'm discovering, like, all kinds of new stuff that I've never imagined would be at this level. Even the romance comics, I've been reading some, like, Golden Age romance comics, and the art is awesome. I mean, it's really awesome.
I haven't gotten too much into that. I got a couple of those Green Lantern Justice, or what is it, the Silver Age omnibuses on the sale a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah,
I haven't even opened them up yet.
The Gil Kane stuff.
Yeah. Yep. I like the covers, though, for all those. All the Golden Age and the Silver Age omnibuses they're doing all have similar styles in the covers.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like those.
Is that Doc Shaner that's doing those?
I don't know. Let me look it up.
He has that style. I know he's doing covers for something right now.
Yeah, he has like a Steve Rude style, very classic looking.
That's Steve Rude Action Comics 1000 is beautiful. Holy moly. that stands out like an image that, like, is, oh man, it's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever see that The Dude documentary on Amazon?
No, I have not.
If you want,
so far behind in TV, it's like ridiculous.
Well, just like even just the interviewing of him, and then you look behind him in his workshop and you just see these large canvases of like pinup art that he's doing, or comic book art, or sci-fi art, just to see all this. It's a feast for your eyes. It's not just a documentary that you're going to put on in the background and like not even stare at and just listen to. No, you'll be transfixed with how beautiful some of this stuff that you've never even seen before.
Yeah.
Just like little like doodles that he was doing, maybe for a private collector or for himself. You just don't know.
So the cover.
Let me
interject. The cover artist is Michael Cho.
Oh, good on Michael Cho.
Mm-hmm. Anyways, continue.
Why is he not drawing like that normally?
Well, I was looking at previews recently because the DC switched to the magazine instead of the big book,
mm-hmm.
and I noticed that Doc Shaner was doing a couple covers. I was surprised because I thought for a lot of those, like, I wasn't really paying attention. I thought they were just taking images from that decade. I didn't realize they were redrawing them.
That's great.
Yeah, they're really good.
So, Mike, where would Clone Saga fall for you in regards to Marvel events?
It felt a lot like a DC event, like Nightfall or something like that. It's that big.
Like, and operatic?
Well, yeah, it's like a, like Amazing Spider-Man 400 was like, mm-hmm. I'll be honest with you, it's probably my, God, it's in my top five Spider-Man stories of all time. Like,
ooh.
I broke down. I cried 3 times. I mean, holy crap. Usually the first time I'll tear up, but holy moly, man, the scenes between Aunt May and Peter were just heartbreaking, man.
Mm-hmm.
I had never read that before, and I And she was in a coma for like, I don't know, maybe like 50 issues. She was in a coma for a long time. I didn't think she was going to come out. And then she comes out of the coma and she tells Peter, she's like, and this is where I really break down, because my grandmother told me the same thing. She's like, Peter, the doctor won't let me leave. She says, you got to take me home. And it's like, they want to go home and they know they're going to die, you know? And it's mm-hmm. just heartbreaking. Mm-hmm. And it's like, they know. And Peter just thought, okay, she's okay. I want to take her home. But May knew she was going to die. And she did not want to die in the hospital. And that's what would have happened if Peter didn't take her out. And then it's crazy because Mary Jane's pregnant at this time. And like, I didn't read this time period to know really what happens to the baby and everything. But so this is all new to me. And like when Aunt May sees her and she just comes out of the kitchen and she like made Aunt May her favorite muffins. And she's like, Aunt May looked at her and she said, you're pregnant. And Aunt May, you know, Mary Jane was like, how the hell do you know? And she goes, I can tell. And, there was just so much heartfelt like moments in that story. It just tore me up. And, I actually feel for Ben Reilly too, because at this time it flip flops almost every issue. Like you don't know who's real and who's not. Mm. And at first Pete and Ben, they hate each other because they despise each other, but Ben Reilly loves Aunt May just as much as Peter does. Like all his memories are there. So it's just like heartbreaking for both of them. And it's amazing. And then it has that storytelling, which is like the storytelling that I love, which is three stories happening simultaneously every mm-hmm. issue.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that run of Spider-Man, I know it gets a lot of, you know, poo-poos. Do you think that's because people didn't read it in collections? So they went a long time waiting for the next issue, and then that's how it became convoluted because they couldn't read one issue after another?
I think that's one reason. I think the other reason is because they couldn't make up their mind. Like, the story dragged on for a long time. Like, I'm telling you, I still don't know who's real.
Wow.
After 1,200 pages.
Wow. You have to go into Omnibus 2.
Yeah, I got to go into Omnibus 2 and find out. Like, they give you clues, but then they throw stuff at you, and they throw it on the wall, and you're like, holy crap, they could be switching it up again. So it's
red herrings?
It's like red herrings. And there's other clones they throw in.
Oh, my God.
There was another Peter clone out there. And there's a Gwen clone. And they like, reenact the death of Gwen Stacy, and it is pretty damn deep. It's very weird because you know this Gwen is a clone and Green Goblin attacks and you're like, Spider-Man has to make the decision. And he's like, holy crap, what am I going to do? The last time I snapped her neck, and he knows she's just a clone, but he's like, what do I do?
Wow.
You know? So, I mean, there's stories like that, and it's an amazing journey. And maybe it's just because it hit me at the right time. Like, I don't know. Like,
it sounds like there's good like psychological mind games in that.
Oh, there is. The Jackal is that Professor Milo. What, God, that guy's an asshole. I don't know what his motivation is, but he's the biggest ass I've ever seen. Like he's like pulling the strings the whole damn time. Like he even gets arrested and he wants to be in prison at this time. And then there's all kinds of other weird stuff that happens. So yeah, it's pretty deep. And then you have Kane and he's like a clone of Peter that's killing people. He's like the Punisher type. And wow. He's got all of the Sinister Six and everybody terrified because he's like, he's going to hunt us down and kill us. So they form a posse to go after him.
I might have to switch my reading order. I might have to read this for the summer.
I tell you, if you don't break down for 400, man, I would be shocked. Because
I'll break down.
I'll tell you right now, you are way more of a Spider-Man fan than I am. And if you see those scenes between that, oh, and then you get the J. Jonah Jameson. Holy crap. J. Jonah Jameson might be a dick, but when Peter needed him when he went to prison for murder, this sounds like a whole soap opera, doesn't it?
It does. Oh, my God. It sounds so good.
J. Jonah Jameson was there, man. He made sure he had the best lawyer that he could possibly have. And he's like, Mary Jane, who do I call? Do I call Matt Murdock? Oh, shit, he's dead.
Wow. Wow. Well, I just read it was like Amazing Spider-Man 60 or 61 where Peter has amnesia.
Yeah.
And Aunt May is in the hospital and she's worrying so much about Peter. Where's Peter? Where's Peter? And this went on for, boy, like 4 issues. It was a long time of her just going steadily downhill. Finally, they put her in a hospital and she was just going downhill, downhill. And then as soon as Peter, after these 4 or 5 issues, regains his memories and knows where he's at, he went back to May's house and didn't realize that he was gone for as long as he was. So yeah. May wasn't at her house and finally figured out that she was at a hospital. But of course, Stan the Man Lee, as soon as May sees Peter, there's even a line of dialogue from, I believe it was a doctor that said, oh, seeing her, not grandson, but seeing Peter is like healthy tonic water. I can already see the health reviving in her. It was just like, oh, brother. Like, Stan, come on. But still, like, I could easily throw that away just because it's like, I know what he's saying. It
yeah,
just
you
might
know
be
what
a little
getting,
clumsy,
you know what he's getting at, yeah.
Yeah.
Because that is true, though. Like, if you see somebody that you love that you hadn't seen in a while, they could influence your health. I mean, it really is. I mean,
for sure.
They have studies where if you've been married forever and your lifelong partner passes, the other one doesn't last very long, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because they were attached at the hip. And it's like you don't know how to think or act or be without that person.
Because
mm-hmm. you wake up with that person every morning. And it's like you go to sleep with that person every night. And as the decades go on, you get closer and closer, and then one of you passes, and it's like, holy crap, how do I live? What do I have to live for anymore?
Yeah, or it's the parent that has a child who gets wrapped up in addiction, and you see, like, the health of the parent. All that stress is weighing on them so much that you see the health of the parent start to decay. Like, it's really scary to watch that person who cares so much for their loved one that it can even affect their health.
Oh, yeah.
And you can see, like, all of the pain and worry and stress just beating them down day after day because they don't know what to do. They're helpless.
That's right.
Yeah, it's frightening. Now, Mike, do you think, and granted you only read, what, half of the event, you still have another omnibus to go?
Yeah, whole of omnibus.
Yeah, which is crazy. Do you think Marvel had it in their head that there could be a possibility of killing May?
I don't know. I don't know if a lot of it was like spur of the moment.
Because you know how they wanted to, like, well, should we kill Dick?
Yeah.
You know, and then all of a sudden it was like, no, we better not kill Dick. No, no, no. Wrong decision.
I think there were a lot of meetings with Clone Saga. And I've heard some stuff. Like, I think there are a couple interviews out there that talk about how things ended and what things that they thought about that they did not do. And once I'm done with that stuff, I might seek it out. But I don't want to like know and have it influence. Yeah, influence like what could have been or I want to.
Understandable.
Yeah.
Or all of a sudden you hear an interview or read an interview and it's one of those while you're reading it, it's like, yeah, but what if this would have happened? Oh, but, and then you just start imagining like how far that could have went.
Right.
Which is really frustrating to do.
I hate doing that. That's why I love just staying in the dark. Like, I don't care if I find out, like, oh, somebody dies, or, oh, they were just a Skrull. Like, no big deal. Like, I don't care about learning about that, but I still want to
You still want
read
to experience it.
Yeah. I want to read it and make my own value decision.
Yeah. That's the way I am. I always have to make my own opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Because what I think is great, some other people might think it sucks. I mean, it just, like, we all have experienced different things in life, and we might become emotional to something that somebody, it won't even faze somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
And it happens with reading too. Like, you experience different decades of comic books, and sometimes you might have been in a vulnerable state at some time in your life, and that particular story touches you, and then you see something like that again, and it's going to influence you more than it would somebody else that didn't experience that experience that you had. So you really need to, I mean, it's one thing to get an opinion like, what should I read next or something, you know, that's cool, but you shouldn't let somebody influence you not reading something just because they say it sucks. Because it might not suck to you.
Martin, will reading Annihilation send you reading Annihilation Conquest?
Oh, yeah.
Will it send you down that road?
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah, I'm already expecting that.
What about, what is it, Thanos Imperative?
Yeah, most likely. I want to read Infinity, too.
Yeah.
That was really good.
Yeah, that was fun. And that got sort of lukewarm reviews.
Did it?
When that first Infinity again? I can't remember.
That's the, who is that, Remender?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, I remember this.
Yeah.
That was Hickman.
Hickman, there you go, that's the one.
Yeah.
I thought it was fine.
Yeah, I liked it.
Yeah. You can't, I don't know, dude.
Hickman's a writer that, well, Fantastic Four was different for me than Avengers, but I gave up on his Avengers because it was so big, but I wasn't seeing the personalities of the characters. It was more story driven, and he mm-hmm. drove me away. And then one night, I think it was near Christmas week, I had loaded a bunch of those codes onto my iPad, and I just read them like in two nights. And I was like, holy crap, this is awesome. What was I thinking?
Mm-hmm.
So it's amazing how I can shift, like, not liking something to absolutely loving it.
Yeah, it's just a different frame of mind.
Yeah.
Maybe you just weren't open to it at the, you know, start.
And it's different, too, when you read it, like, in one piece versus little chunks.
Oh, my God. That story especially, reading that only one issue or two issues a month, I couldn't even imagine trying to keep that pace going.
And that's why I dropped it. I just couldn't get into it.
That's why I trade read.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's a good – I thoroughly enjoyed his Fantastic Four run and Avengers run. Just as trade reads, they're really, really fun.
They're phenomenal. I double-dipped mm-hmm. on that for sure. I got the omnibuses.
See?
I think
I triple dipped on the Fantastic Four because I wanted to read it digitally. I didn't want to be holding the 30-pound omnibus.
You know what's nice about those though is it's so big. Like, I don't know what the dimensions are, but each panel is at least, I think it's three times the size, or at least twice.
Mm-hmm.
It's just blown up. And it looks so much better. It is a beast to read, especially when I was like at page 1,000. It's like mm-hmm. really hard to hold when you're towards. If you're in the middle, it's the perfect ideal world.
God forbid you fall asleep and the book falls over onto the floor. It'll crush Harley.
I would put it on my legs and I would have this huge indentation on it after I was done. That's not good for circulation.
No,
it's not. We were talking about circulation earlier. I'd have to have. I should get some compression socks when I read an omnibus.
Hey, they're sexy.
Those things I had to put on my dad a lot, and nothing stressed me out more than that because my dad had streptococcus in his knee, and it was threatening to get into the bone. And he was in like one of those homes for a while in a rehab, and I would have to help him put on those socks, and it would give me like anxiety because they're so freaking tight.
Yeah.
And it would cause the movement of just a little bit would cause excruciating pain. So the amount of anxiety it would give me was incredible. Once the sock was on, I was fine, but taking it off and putting it on, it would give me so much stress. It's the one thing, it's the one thing in life I look at now that gives me the most anxiety is to know that my parents are getting older. It just hurts, and I'm going to have to deal with it, and it's going to be one of the roughest things in my life. I know it is.
Wow, this
anime stuff is bringing a lot of emotions out.
I think about the same thing, Mike. My mom just moved about a year and a half ago to Arizona, which is great for her. I totally support it. It's very exciting. But to think, like, I've seen her, I've gone down there a couple times. She's come up here. But to, like, see her and you just sort of look for every signal that she's getting older. And I just want her back in Chicago. Because it's like when she left, I was seeing her about every 10 days, 2 weeks. And before my grandmother passed away for like her last year and a half, every Tuesday I'd go see her. Like, it just became a routine. And I started to do that with my mom, and I've seen my dad a heck of a lot more as well. And no one told me to do this. It's just on me to do this. And now that she's in Arizona, it's like, I can't do that. And that just, it just crushes me. So like in my head, before she left, I told her like, hey, I'll be calling you every Tuesday after work. And my, you know, hour drive home, I will be talking to you on the phone.
Yeah.
Because I just want, I want to have that weekly connection with. So.
And it's harder when you don't see them like a lot because you notice things, right? Because it's not a gradual thing. It's not like a gradual thing. You see them every so often. You notice things that have changed because they're more dramatic than if it's gradual.
Mm-hmm.
And it's tougher. Like it's tough. Because when this happened to my dad, it was like devastating for both my mom. We talk about couples that have been together forever. My dad and my mom are like, my mom doesn't know how to function without my dad. Like, she just won't drive. She won't do stuff. She locks herself down. And my dad is like the strongest man there is. Like, you never see him cry. His will is really strong. But when he was on that oxycodone, man, holy crap. He wasn't even the same man. Like, it had just broke him down. That is an awful drug. I know it takes away pain, but what it does to people, it's awful. That's why it's one of the most addicting drugs these days. Like, people are still oxycodone.
Mm-hmm.
And there's people that are addicted to the painkillers, but it messes with you big time. Like, personalities change. It's a hardcore drug. Wow, how did we get here?
It's Aunt May, man.
Damn it, everyone, Aunt May.
Everyone can relate.
Yeah.
We all have that person that we love unconditionally in our lives. And it's easy to see it through a grandparent, you know?
Yeah.
You can get in arguments with your parents or your brother, your sister, a hell of a lot easier. But a grandparent, it's always like 99% of grandparents, they will give you a pass on everything, and as well as the grandkid will give any grandparent a pass.
Mm.
Just it's set up that way.
Yeah, I remember one of my grandfather, he would get so much stuff from my grandmother. I called him Nana and Tata. But there was one time I remember she sent my Tata to take me to the store and get me a little golden book. And I remember this explicitly because he got so much shit. He went to, you know, do you remember the little golden books? They were like stories and they had pictures in them and they had a little gold binding on them.
Yes, of course.
Yeah. Those are stuff that we grew up with, right, Nick?
I mean, yeah.
Little golden books.
Those were our first comics.
Yeah. And that's, I didn't want one of those. I saw the spinner rack and I said, Tata, I want this Ghost comic. It was Ghosts. It was a 20-cent DC comic called Ghosts. and I wanted this comic so bad. And I don't know why it was, because it wasn't superhero. I wanted this ghost stuff. I wanted to be scared. And I convinced him that, hey, that little golden book's like a dollar and a quarter, and this is only 20 cents. I said, get me this comic book. And my Nana, man, when she found out, she just gave him so much crap. I told you I wanted you to get him this good, happy book, and he comes back with this comic book Ghost, which I'll never forget that. But I saved him money.
That's classic.
You guys are old. I've never even heard of that.
Little golden books?
Yep.
Man, there was a thing back then. Because those were the books that like taught you to read and stuff. They were like the kids' books today. But they were like, what were they, like 25 pages? They weren't that much. They were like 30 pages. And it would teach you to read. It had text on the bottom, and then it would have like a picture of what was happening, but not like sequential artwork. It would just be like one picture per page. Okay. But you had like Jack and Jill. You had a bunch of stuff that, I mean, they did a little golden book for everything. They did Sesame Street little golden books, all kinds of stuff.
Hmm.
It was licensed.
Interesting.
Very distinctive. You missed out. You didn't get little golden books.
I did. We didn't have cool shit. Bastards. We just had regular comics.
Yeah, I was going to say, you could still, I mean, I still got comics at a very young age, and I would flip through them like they're coloring books.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, you know, 2-3 years later, I discovered reading, so then I could go back to all of my old comic books and read them now.
That's what I started with. I started just looking at the pictures. And I pretty much learned, I wanted to learn to read because of comics.
Mm-hmm. Same here.
Hmm.
That or I wanted to get sick, because every time I got sick, my mother would go to the grocery store, and she'd always, whenever I was sick, she'd bring back a couple comics. So it was always exciting.
I would never want to get sick. I got most of my comics for free because of the garbage dump. So
nice.
Yeah,
still to this day,
I'm very fortunate.
I still wish my wife would go, like, when I'm homesick, I wish she would go and, like, I'm just going to swing into Nick's comic book store and get him a couple comic books. I always wish. Just once. Come on.
Yeah, that'd be nice. So I saw that you posted something, Martin, about the Antarctic Press.
Yeah.
And I've honestly never read anything from them, because they tend to be more like anime, like with Gold Digger and stuff like that.
Really?
You know, like the style. Yeah. So that cover looked interesting. Can you tell us a little? I know it's something that Nick would not want to hear about, because it's like horror genre, but I'm really curious to see what that is about.
Yeah, it was
Mike will allow it because you're a guest, but Martin also knows towards the end of the podcast, he doesn't talk about horror because I have to go to bed. But we'll allow it.
I'll try to keep it, Nick friendly.
Keep it, like, PG-13, what was that? The Quiet Place or whatever.
Oh yeah. The Quiet Place.
Oh my. Can you keep it PG-13 Lost Boys? Is that better?
It was really interesting, because it starts off with, it's a group of friends, and they go into the woods, and they find this demon thing, and one of them tries to go pet it, and she gets her head ripped off.
Oh, so it's a violent one.
Oh, it is bloody as all hell. It's extremely bloody.
What's the art style like?
It depends on the pages. Like, on some, it looks a little too young adult for me.
Yeah.
But there's some pages where it's like really dark. It reminded me, are you reading Infidel? Another book that Nick won't read?
Yeah, but that's Aaron Campbell.
Yeah. There's some pages that have that style.
Well, Aaron Campbell's awesome.
He's,
I have some of
fantastic.
His original artwork. So, yeah, he drew, I was introduced to Aaron Campbell from The Shadow. He drew The Shadow when Garth Ennis was writing it.
Mm.
And it was amazing. Like, that was I was like blown away by his artwork.
Yeah, there's a few pages like that. It's not all like that, so don't expect that going into the book. Like I said, a lot of it feels more young adultish. But man, like there's a couple pages like towards the end of the book. There's a new girl in town, and you learn she's the teether, and like she's in the bathroom because nobody talks to her, right? So she's kind of hiding out in the bathroom or whatever. And a kid goes to try to talk to her, and she literally eats his head off. And like that sequence of panels really reminds me a lot of Infidel, which is what I really enjoyed. I don't know. I don't want to spoil it too much. The story could be better, but for a first issue from a publisher I've never read anything from, I was really, really impressed. So maybe I'm a little biased towards that, but yeah, I don't know, man. The story itself was interesting. I want to see where it goes. I don't know if you ever saw that movie Teeth, the girl that's got teeth in her vagina.
Yeah, I heard about it.
You should watch it. It's interesting. It's got elements of that. It's got elements of like the Goonies, but it's all horror.
Yeah.
So I want to see how it ends up going, because right now it could go in a few directions, a couple that I wouldn't want it to go in. But it's got that like Stranger Things vibes a little bit, which like everybody's doing nowadays. So it could be really good.
The cover looked really good.
The cover's fantastic.
Yeah.
And
I don't think I've ever seen that. I kind of skip over that section. I mean, they have done zombie books in the past.
Yeah.
But I've never read them. Like it's always the same guy that's doing the zombie books.
Really?
Yeah.
I might try to check that out.
Or another. The Last Zombie, or I can't remember what the title of it is, but he's done several volumes of it.
So what you should try to do is, I've got a pull list of stuff that I'm always getting, right? But I always want to try at least like one new book a week or every couple weeks. So I'll go on Comic List, because they have all the books coming out that week from every publisher. And I'll flip through it and see if I missed any from like Marvel or DC or Image, anything like that. And then I'll see what the small publishers are doing. I was going through it and I saw Antarctic Press, and I usually skip past that section. But it said Teether. And for some reason, just the name of it reminded me of that Teeth movie. So I was like, well, I wonder what, maybe this is like the Teeth sequel. You know what I mean? So I checked it out and the cover just blew me away. So I had to read it just based on the cover.
Yeah.
But not definitely not for Nick, and definitely not for kids.
Nick wants to go into the Ultraverse.
I don't want vaginas having teeth.
Dude, you've never seen that movie?
Bodies.
That's totally up your alley.
Oh yeah, right up the alley.
I'm surprised I haven't watched it, because that is I'm a fan of those types of films.
I want to say it's on either Netflix or Hulu, or it was recently.
It was, yeah. I had seen it there, and I'm like, teeth in the vagina? Huh.
Yeah, it was interesting. It was interesting. But yeah, no, Teether's really good. I'm going to stick with it.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It's tough finding people, like, doing different stuff, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
A lot of people try to copy what everybody else is doing. I finally read Spencer and Locke. I know Ronnie's going to be super happy. I talked about it on the episode I recorded today that'll be out tomorrow, but I don't know if you guys ever read that. It fucking blew me away. It was incredible.
It says the Calvin and Hobbes thing, huh?
Yeah, it was really freaking good. There's some panels that they imitate Calvin and Hobbes. I don't want to talk about the story itself because it'll give away what it's about, but the guy's got, he's a detective, and his partner is a blue panther, a giant blue panther. In a suit, and it's really fucking good.
Yeah, I think the only one I'm missing is number one. It was one of those ones that I guess I was like trying to do the good thing that month. Every now and then I go on these moral tangents where I say, you know what, I'm not going to buy any new number ones. What the hell? And then I order number two, and then I'm like, why didn't I get number one? And that book went up in price.
Did it?
And it's hard to get because it became a spec book because they were going to do something with it.
Wow.
Huh.
So I never got number one. So if I do it, I'll probably read it digitally and then jump into the paper after number one.
I want to say that Ronnie talked to the guy at C2E2. I think he was there.
Oh, yeah?
I'm pretty sure. I think I saw him post a picture of a signed trade.
I like them. I usually get quite a few of their books. We just read the Harcourt Legacy, and that was really good.
Yeah, Harcourt Legacy's good.
Yeah.
What book did
that you talk about a book that the characterization is just almost better than the story. It's the Harcourt Legacy. The characterizations of the whole situation there is amazing.
Well, I like character better than story anyway, so.
Yeah, it is totally character-driven, and it's interesting to read that because of the kids, because their parents are so borderline ready to have a divorce.
Mm.
And then there's magic and stuff involved, and a rich granduncle, which you usually don't see like a granduncle that's going to pass, willing to give up his stuff instead of giving it to his sister, which is the grandmother. He wants to give it to the next generation. So yeah, that was a really good surprise. Mm-hmm. From Action Lab. The danger zone, that's where I like to stay. What danger zone?
You're a Zombie Tramp fan too.
I read all of them. Zombie Tramp.
Didn't they just have, no, never mind, that was Scout.
Now they have the dark, it's not the Dark Betty. I get confused because there's two Betty titles.
Oh, Black Betty, yeah.
Black Betty, yeah.
Yeah,
Death,
yeah.
Betty. There's Death Betty and there's Black Betty, and they have Black Betty. And Black Betty's in the doll face and that world of Zombie Tramp, except she's the one that hunts the monsters. A monster hunter.
I hadn't checked that out. The only one I'd read was Zombie Tramp. Just because I remember you and Bill talked about it, and I was like, well, what the hell is this? Let's just read it.
Well, a friend of ours does it. It's Steve Gaboni. I can't remember. I met him at the Comic Geek Speak convention. They had a super show one time, and I went to it, and I met him. And he did the Puppet Master comics, too. Hmm. He is a horror buff. So, matter of fact, his wife drew me a couple of commissions. She drew me the Human Bomb, I think, and Phantom Lady, because I'm a Freedom Fighter guy. I love it.
No, that's cool. Puppet Master, like, based on the movie?
Yeah.
No kidding.
He had a pretty big run of Puppet Master. His name is Sean Gabarin, and he's pretty amazing. They published, him and his wife had a an independent comic publishing house called Angry Gnome. And Sean is a big fan of horror. So he came out with this, I can't remember. It was called Short Stack. It's an anthology. And this comic book's pretty amazing. Him and his wife did it, and he had a bunch of various artists do it. He was able to pull off horror stories in two pages.
Nice.
And that was his thing. That's why it was called Short Stack, because he would tell an anthology-type horror story in two pages. I thought it was pretty amazing. Like, they used to do a lot of those two-page horror books in back of horror books.
Mm-hmm.
So it was pretty he's really good with horror, and he's into that. And that when he got the Puppet Master, he was happy, and now he's got Black Betty, so... He's sort of in the genre, even though it's like dark humor. It's a dark humor universe.
Yeah, I'm going to have to track that down because it's not on Comixology.
Yeah. Yeah, I dig the horror books, but the best horror books, in my opinion, are at Amigo. That's where it's at.
Oh, I read that the Black Forest, Dark Forest, something like
that.
That was really good. All,
yeah, the Suicide Forest.
Suicide Forest, yep.
Yeah. And then they did a Roman Ritual. That's pretty freaky.
Oh, yeah. I got the trade on Amazon because you guys were talking about that.
Yeah.
That shit was not cheap either.
Oh, it's not. I double-dipped on that because that was one of my favorite. Like, he does really good horror comics. He's my favorite horror story guy. So, like, Amigo, that's where I go for guaranteed horror that's sort of original, like it has an original voice. I like original horror movies. I like movies that you can't predict the outcome.
Mm-hmm.
That's why Get Out, like I think Nick would even like it because it's more suspense and stuff, but it's a different kind of horror movie. And then The Quiet Place. Interesting too, because they play with things that aren't typical horror.
Yeah, Quiet Place was great. It got a little more typical sci-fi-ish towards the end. Yeah. But before you saw the monsters, it was really suspenseful.
Yeah.
But that's what I can't do, guys.
that's when it's the best, though.
No, that's when it's the worst. I hate suspense. Ugh. Even the cat jumps, those even get me.
I love them.
But you like stuff like Lost Boys, right?
Yeah, sure.
Did you like Fright Night?
Yes. There were
I love Fright Night so much. that's one of the movies that, like, I can't, if it's on, I have to stop and watch it. Peter Vincent, the great vampire killer. I just, and it always scared me, even though it's funny. Like, the scary part that drives me insane is when he's just there watching TV, like horror theater at night, and he looks across the window. And he sees the murderer. He sees him kill a woman. He doesn't actually see him kill her. He's just like, he sees these long fingernails go across her neck. And the next day he's at school and they show, oh, this person was murdered and found dead over here. And he knows that she was killed across the street. That's pretty scary, man. I would shit my pants. I love that movie. Evil Ed. He was an amazing Spider-Man too.
Was he?
Nah, he was. I always make fun of it because it's the actor in Valerian. But if you, an Amazing Spider-Man, the second movie with Garfield, and he's Spider-Man. He's like the Hobgoblin type villain in that movie, and he looks so much like Evil Ed from Fright Night.
I don't know if I saw that, the second Amazing Spider-Man. I've never seen Homecoming either.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Shame
get on that.
Yeah.
I've told him.
I know.
He's finally, for me personally, he's finally growing on me. I had a rough time as him as Spider-Man because to me, there's some mannerism about him that reminds me of like a really old man and wears his pants up to his tits. I don't know. It just he has this like face of a really old guy, and I don't know why, but I'm finally getting over that. I think with Infinity War, I grew past it. I started liking him.
I liked him in Civil War. He was great in Infinity War.
Yeah,
that little part in Infinity War, I did peel a tear with Peter.
Mm.
Oh, so you saw it? I didn't know you saw it.
I saw it yesterday.
Oh.
I've been keeping it on the down low.
Keeping it on the down low.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I did reached out to Tom Whatmore just tonight to be like, hey, what are you doing on Tuesday? We should go. So I'll be seeing it again Tuesday.
Yeah, I'd like to see it again. I got an interesting phone call from my parents because they were really emotional about the movie. And I didn't get emotional because I like know what the gauntlet represents. It's so weird. It's like none of the deaths meant anything to me.
Yeah.
Because I know there's a time and reality gem, and you even see like Drax get destroyed and then reassembled. And I just, because I know the power of the gauntlet and what the gems can do, it distracted me from any emotional significance. And like, you know that certain people can't die because their movie was a $1 billion movie.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you just like know it. And, but the interesting thing is like for the non-comic book reader, I'm really fascinated by it because my parents were like, oh my God, they killed so-and-so. What are we going to do? You know, they're calling me and they're like, what happened? They're like, Michael, they're all dead. What's going on? I can't believe they killed them all. And I'm like, I can't tell you, Mom. I said, all I will tell you is that gauntlet has power. And if you paid attention to the movie, you'll see some of it. But she was she was devastated. She's like, holy mackerel, they killed all these people.
Yeah, Peter's scene, that's the part for me that, like, I completely teared up, and my wife looked over and she was like, what's going on? And then I just sort of had to tell her, like, in a real quick way, because I wanted to get back to the movie, why that affected me so much.
Yeah.
And it was one of those, like, yes, am I pretty, I'm a real softy, so it's easy for me to cry. But it affected me the same way as Lois Lane and Ma Kent in Justice League. Like, it, for me, it's just, it always, there's always a connection of the hero has to do something that no one else wants to do or can do. And then the loved ones of that person knowing this, and yet they have to be selfless as well. And
yeah.
That's the part, like, when he said he's sorry, that was the part that was like, Jesus Christ, what else could he do? He's not Thor. What the hell else could he do? But for him to say that, it's just like, damn, whether the Russo brothers or the writer read 50 years of Spider-Man, I'm not sure. But they figured that character out right there in that little bit right there.
Well, they did a good job with him overall. I mean,
yeah,
because
sure.
he had to hijack on the ship, mm-hmm. and he could have easily went away. I did like the seeing the spider armor on the big screen. It looked really cool.
Hell yeah.
Because
oh, yeah.
when he needed to brace himself, those arms came back down, you know, and they come into the ground, and it's like, that's pretty badass, man.
Yeah, there were a lot of cool badass
it's
points.
It's weird with the Marvel movies. I don't get as emotional, but with DC, I, like, cry like a baby. And I don't know why it is, but the one character that does emotionally get me is Tony Stark for some reason. Like, when he has these scenes with Gwyneth Paltrow, I love it. Like, everybody laughs at me and they don't believe me, but Iron Man 3 is my favorite movie. I have seen that like about 20 times, and that is my Marvel movie. I love the Tony Stark Iron Man. Captain America, I like his movies, but man, they make it really dark. And I'm a Grenwald Captain America guy. I mean, that's when my Cap, which was very different than, you know, like Winter Soldier and stuff.
It was
yeah,
good,
I want to see that movie. I'm really curious to hear the episode if you did record it with you and your daughter. That'd be interesting.
Yeah, I decided to put it out later this week. Because I was gonna put it out Friday, and then I was like, well, not everybody's seen the movie yet.
Yeah.
And you know, everybody always rushes to fucking every time a new movie comes out. The next day is like, here's all the reviews.
Yeah.
I'm like, come on, dude. Like, I haven't seen it yet. I don't want to read your review.
Mm-hmm.
So I made we recorded it, but I'm not going to put it out probably till the end of the week. Because I figure as much money as it's made, like, everybody has seen it by now.
I'm really curious to see, because if I had saw this movie when I was a kid, I can't imagine what would have done to me as far as, like, especially if I didn't know about the Infinity Gauntlet, because it's emotional.
Oh, well, let me tell you, Zoe.
It could be deep. Like, I would have been bawling.
Yeah, Zoe cried at the scene. Well, we can spoil it, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so sure. when Gamora dies, Zoe started crying because Guardians of the Galaxy is her favorite movie.
Yeah.
We've seen the 1 and 2 together like at least a dozen times a piece. She loves the hell out of them. So she's invested in the Guardians.
Yeah.
And so when Gamora died, she started crying. And like I hadn't noticed at first, but I heard the like a little whimper, and I looked over and like her face just blood red, and she's got tears running down her eyes.
Wow.
And then it kind of quit for a little while, but then when everybody started disappearing. Like, she was crying out loud. Like, I'm sure everybody in the movie heard her.
Yeah.
And, like, I tried to appease her, and she just, like, she didn't want to hear anything about it. But her eyes were glued to the screen the whole time. And she's just freaking bawling, crying. And, like, she wouldn't even talk to me. You know, like, I try to go and give her a hug. She's like, no. She's like, I'm watching the movie. I'm like, all right, whatever. But yeah, she cried probably the last 10 or 15 minutes at least, like nonstop. And then all through the ending credits. And then when the Easter egg scene at the end popped up, like she kind of started calming down a little bit, and then she was fine.
Yeah.
But
My wife was the same way when Chris Pratt died, but I think that was just because she won't be able to see his bare chest anymore.
I like the fact that they were poking at his weight, like with the because he did look a little pudgy. They were like, "You're looking a little pudgy there."
But can I wrap back around to earlier, and I know listeners love this, sorry, but earlier in the podcast when we were talking about red herrings.
Yeah.
Because I had this conversation with my wife about all of the red herrings that Marvel might have officially leaked out or unofficially leaked out. But all the pictures of Captain Marvel testing her costume, getting her hair cut, all of the Infinity Stone, when Cap catches Thanos' punch and you don't see all the Infinity Stones in the gauntlet. Like, there were so many red herrings that Marvel specifically did. And they also, I mean, that started with the last Thor film as well.
Like, I thought for sure Cap was going to be dead after he smacked him. Because
right.
I said, oh, Cap's dead. Like, he's gone. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no way that was one of my favorite scenes, though, because when they do something like with somebody that just their power is their spirit, you know, mm-hmm. what I mean? Not that his strength is the strongest, but his spirit and his will is stronger than any of those people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like when he was a kid in the first movie, you know, he's getting picked on and punched, beating the crap out of him. And then he'd come back up, right? He'd come back up and be all scrawny, ready to fight again and knock down again. Bam. And then he's back up again. It's like this will to never give up. And yep. that was a pretty powerful scene. I liked it. I love anytime you have like a Braveheart or this big scene where you're all charging to your death and you know your death. Mm-hmm. I'm a sucker for this, man. And that's what this whole fight on Wakanda, when they were all going and then those beasts are just like, you know, marching in. That was like my favorite scene when they were all attacking at once. And you even have War Machine just like dropping the bombs out of his back. I was like, that's cool as shit. Like, boom, boom, boom.
See, I missed all those red herrings, though. Because
we talked about it, Martin. Because
yeah.
Remember, even Marvel said there's going to be 160 heroes on screen.
Right.
Remember, when we yep. were like, how are they doing that?
Yep.
So it's one of those, like, this was all very calculated just to have people, like, go off and write articles for Bleeding Cool or whatever just to try to figure out how is this all going to be done. Like, it's smart marketing, but holy cow. Like, even my wife was like, what happened to, you know, this scene in the trailer? And I was just like, yeah, I don't know. I have no clue.
Yeah, after I saw it, Jack was sending me a bunch of images. He's like, well, what happened to this? What happened to that? I was like, dude, I have no idea. I haven't seen any of those. Because I was on blackout from this movie for, like, weeks. So I didn't even see all the trailers.
Yeah, smart.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that I didn't like is one of the things that I'm infatuated with is Thanos and his beloved death.
Mm.
And I really think they made him look like a Ra's al Ghul or Vandal Savage, which is kind of like, hey, the population is increasing. In order to save the world, I need to destroy the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I really miss the, hey, I want to appease death. Like, I'm in love with death. And that's why I want to kill all these. And instead, they turned him into more like a Ra's. That's what he reminds me of. Anytime Ra's always puts plagues on the earth. He always does all kinds of crazy shit because he doesn't want the world to be overpopulated. He wants to destroy the weak. I mean, there's this whole philosophy of kill the weak. And Thanos is, he was just randomly killing everybody.
Well, no, it wasn't random because he saw what happened in his home planet and he didn't want that to happen everywhere else.
I know, but he wasn't like Raish is like, I'll kill the weak and keep the strong alive.
Yeah.
If you look at who he was killing, he killed a lot of people just randomly. It had nothing to do with their strength. I mean, like, why would he kill Black Panther or Spider-Man? I mean, that one, he wiped out everybody that was on that world except for Tony.
Yeah.
And it was weird because he was already pierced with that one thing that looked like he was going to die anyway. Like, he had that little spike go through his side. So, I don't know. I was really shocked that they killed everybody on that planet. They wiped out everybody.
Yeah, I guess. I think the people that died are the ones that are going to be important going forward, though, right?
Yeah.
Because, like, Black Panther obviously makes too much money. They're not going to kill him. Spider-Man already has another movie coming out. You know, like, the Guardians are a big property for him. So, I think the people that stayed alive are the ones that, you know, once Avengers 4 comes out, those are the ones we're not going to see anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, I had no clue. I don't read social media that much, like, as far as movies go. I had no clue that there was going to be in two parts. Like, I thought this was going to be a movie, and then they were going to just, hey, here comes Ant-Man, here comes Captain Marvel. I didn't know that it was going to be, next year you see another part.
Mm-hmm.
Had no idea.
Yeah, it certainly inspired a pretty long conversation between my wife and I. And she's not even a big Marvel film fan, but I mean, she'll go see a few of the franchises, but not all. But yet, this elicited quite a conversation from her, just wanting to know what's going to happen, what's going on, which is good. Hey, guess what? It was a good film, and if it elicits a conversation from somebody who doesn't read comics, that's all good.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm wondering if this is like somebody's Empire Strikes Back. Like,
because
that Empire Strikes Back was that for me. Like, when I was young and it ended like the bad guys won, I was just devastated. I was just like, holy crap. The bad guys won, and I don't know when the next movie's going to come out. 3 or 4 years later? I can't imagine. Especially somebody that isn't well-versed in what this gauntlet could do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys think they did a good job at, like, setting all this up over the last 10 years?
How do you say the word cumulation?
Sit on the comfy couch. I like that.
That's why the couch stays so wet.
Wet. Sticky. You can't get up really quick.
No judging on this couch, Michael. You know that. Come and sit down.
It's a little sticky. It's comfortable, though.
It's a free base of information. Just come on and sit down.
I think they did a good job. I think Black Panther was better as far as the plot. Mm. I felt.
Nick?
I was thoroughly impressed with, and we've talked about this before, Martin, all of my misgivings before the film, a lot of those misgivings was the information and the garbage red herrings that Marvel and all of the wannabe Marvel nerds were throwing out.
Mm.
The 160 heroes, all this, like, at the end of the day, the Russo brothers know how to make a darn good film. They've proven that before, even with Marvel. But there were so many balls in the air juggling that they had to, like, condense down, as well as keep characters moving forward, progressing, not just becoming stagnant, that it takes a really honed-in director to be able to not make that into a huge-ass mess, which I give it all the credit in the world. I'm shocked at how fantastic it was, how entertaining it was. The place was packed for me. There were tons of people applauding. There were tons of people talking after the film just about what they saw and, like, what they're guessing is going to happen. And I was, honest to God, I expected it to fall somewhere on its face. And it was shocking that it didn't. I was amazed.
Just because they had too much? Is that what you're saying? Is overload?
when you tell me that there's 160 characters on screen, if it's 160 characters, I would be okay with it because I would count all of those dumb demon dogs. But when you say 160 heroes, Jesus Christ, like that is, and I think I even made the analogy once of like, that is saying that you're an Infinity Crisis tie-in and a tie-in comic, and it's like Spectacular Spider-Man, and in the background, Moon Knight swings through one panel. And that's why it's a tie-in.
Like, I would have loved that, by the way.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. That's what I expected. If you're going to tell me there's 160 characters, I was expecting that. And to be only tied into all of these characters that we've already seen, that was pretty shocking. And it was a darn good villain. It was darn good henchmen. It wasn't all just demon dogs like the original Avengers, the first Avengers film.
I'm so glad you mentioned that because the Black Order scenes were amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very impressive.
The character design and everything, extremely impressive. Like, those were some of my favorite scenes in the movie is when they were involved.
They were completely fleshed out as characters.
Well, when they're in New York and it just looks like a disaster is willing to happen and it's just two guys in the middle of the street.
Mm-hmm.
And you have Wong and Doctor Strange and Tony out there trying to stop them. I don't know. It was pretty crazy.
But even the dialogue between Tony and Doctor Strange, Doctor Strange has only been in one film. Like, everybody knows Tony. But to see, like, Doctor Strange, like, even his character really progressed more than just his film.
Oh, yeah. He did a spectacular job. And even when he had the gem, he was going back in time doing, like, a bunch of analysis mm-hmm. on every possibility.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty amazing. Yeah. I really liked the one Black Order guy with the ears. He just looked phenomenal. the big elf ears. Like,
yeah. mm-hmm.
The hood and everything, just the character design looked amazing.
Yep. I kept on looking at Proxima Midnight's face to see, like, how they were doing that thing around her eyes, where that skin melded into her eye horn things. It was really well done.
Yeah, she looked great.
Mm-hmm.
That was a good fight scene there, too, at the end with her and Black Widow.
Yeah, with ScarJo.
ScarJo. I really liked the Vision and Scarlet Witch relationship, too. I bought into it.
Uh-huh.
Like, it reminded me of the Vision and Scarlet Witch series back in the day. Like, I was feeling the emotion when, you know, he kind of wanted just to chill out and be normal. They wanted to be normal, and then they got caught up in this. And I felt for her, like, when she had to make the decision to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
That was deep, man. That was good.
But even the part where they were in France?
Scotland.
At the beginning? Scotland.
Yeah.
At the beginning, like, think about how little time that was on the screen. But yet it told you so much. That's mm-hmm. why it's like, it's all the direction. As well as the writing. Whoever wrote it was fantastic. I mean, there's so many tangents going on in that. But yet, never ever did my wife lead over and was like, what is that? Where's that at? Who is that? Like, it was all clearly defined. I would say, like, Joss Whedon, when he came on board, that's a lot of new characters to introduce as well as putting in a big bad for them to battle together
mm-hmm.
and show their teamwork. Like, this was, I would say, just as hard because you already know all these characters, but you all have to give them a decent amount of screen time. It was impressive.
Yeah, the only thing that I wanted more of was I wanted them to explain why it is that Scarlet Witch is the only one that can kill that stone. Because they've never, like, mentioned why she's so powerful that she has the ability to do that.
No more mutants.
Well, we know that. But nobody, like, that hasn't read comics would know that.
They don't explain chaos magic very well.
Yep.
Well, like in Infinity War, even she, like the comic book, she's not. This pop is a strength. Her strength and magic isn't as strong as Doctor Strange because Galactus seeks out the strongest sorcerer, and he picks Doctor Strange.
Mm-hmm.
So you have Doctor Strange, Surfer, and Frankie, the Nova, not the Nova we know, but the Herald Nova, which is the female Herald of Galactus, they form a team. And the only way the heroes can compete against the villain, Magus, is they get all the sorcerers, and they only have four that they're able to recruit. So it's Scarlet Witch, Agatha Harkness, Dr. Druid, and the Shaman from Alpha Flight. And they say even the four of us are not even in the level of Doctor Strange.
Huh.
But they have to combine their powers in order to be at his level in the comics. But that's way before No More Mutants.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they should have spent a little bit of time on that. But
they
couldn't have done
Scarlet,
it here, though.
Yeah, the thing with Scarlet Witch is chaos magic, though. It's one of those things where it could be as powerful as you want it to be,
mm-hmm.
It, depending on the writer. So it almost has like an infinite amount of power, depending on the situation.
Yeah.
She's beautiful. I don't know. She's hot. And I never saw it until I saw Wind River. I love that movie. God, I love that movie.
I've never seen it. That's on Netflix, isn't it?
That's too bad, because there's one scene in there that I could talk hours about.
Is it a nudie scene?
Mm-mm.
Dang it.
No, but it's like an oh shit scene. Like, I can't believe they just did this shit. It's one of those like breakthrough movie scenes that I've ever seen. Like, it just happens, and it's you can't even talk about it without spoiling it. Because it is big. I think it's big. Nick, I think you know what I'm talking about, but
oh yeah.
That's
I think it is on Netflix.
All right, I'll watch it. I'll put it on the queue.
You know what? I'm a sucker for those movies, Nick. Like Smoke Signals, I love, and then Thunderheart. It kind of had a Thunderheart vibe, and I love Thunderheart with Val Kilmer. Like, that movie's the shit. I just dig the hell out of it. I dig Val Kilmer in general. His movies are awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you need to see that. It's good. You got Hawkeye and Scarlet Witch in it.
All Hawkeye. He was missing from the movie.
Was he?
Well, they said that they were under house arrest because of the government, and he decided to stay with his family under house arrest.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah, because of that whole Civil War bullshit.
I don't think Hawkeye could have handled Thanos anyway.
You never know, man. He killed the Hulk. Bruce went to him and said, "Hey, you need to kill me. It's what you do. You don't miss."
I guess. Maybe he'll be in the next one.
Well, there was Hawkeye missing, and there was somebody else. I can't remember.
Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Yep. Which I think their new movie takes place before
arrest too, because he had that thing. I think he was still arrested.
Yeah. Yep. I'm gonna go see that. I think that'll be fun.
I like the first one.
Yeah, I like the first one. A lot of people poo-poo on it, but it was fun.
I haven't seen a bad Marvel movie. I just see ones that I like more than others. My favorite superhero movie is still The Rocketeer, because of all the movies I've ever seen, it truly defines what a hero is, I think.
Mm-hmm.
God, that was so long ago, too.
Cliff Steele. Yeah, he's awesome.
What was it, like early 90s, mid-90s?
Yeah, and I remember...
it was 80s.
Really?
I saw that in theater.
It was a Disney movie, too, believe it or not.
Mm-hmm.
And it is one of those amazing things, because there wasn't that much source material.
But
it
was Jennifer Connelly.
Oh, my God.
Oh,
God, it's just so good. And then it's a time period that, to me, that's my shit.
Oh, you're right, Martin. 91.
Yeah, 91.
Best soundtrack I've ever heard in my life, too.
Whoa.
I own it. Oh, my God, it's great. But I'm into 40s music. That's...
Jennifer Connelly.
Billy Campbell's the best.
Mm-mm-mm.
Oh, so good. But now
you have that scene in the truck when the gangsters are just chasing him, and he just gets on the back of the truck and then points his rocket, and they just take off.
Oh.
And I like how he, like, skips across the pond like a rock. when he hits the water, it's like, ching, ching, ching.
Well, I have to say, and I know I'll say this very low so the wife doesn't hear. Do I have Marvel Unlimited? Yes. Is there a Silver Age Marvel sale going on right now? Yes.
Do I have a few things in my cart? The hell?
Marvel Unlimited has all that, I think a lot of that Infinity Watch stuff.
Oh, yeah. That's some good, what is it, Ron Lim?
Yeah, it's Ron Lim artwork. And then, you know what I'm loving is the Tom Rainey art in the Warlock. Holy crap, he'd kill like Moondragon and Gamora. It's like, holy mackerel.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
And Gamora kicks the shit out of Thanos in this one issue. I think she stabs him in the neck. I mean, I just love those characters. I'm a sucker for non-popular characters. Well, they can do so much with them. They can get away with murder. That's the thing that makes them so awesome.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have the constraints of the big heroes do. So writers have more wiggle room.
Oh, that's such a good series.
All right, let's wrap this up.
Yeah, I'm glad you guys called me, because this is probably for 2 weekends in a row I'm not going to be able to record. So.
Oh.
Did we steal you away from
Rob
and Bill?
No, I couldn't record this weekend because I have to work. But next weekend's like I got like family things going on, so I won't be able to record.
You can come to the comfy couch. You're always welcome.
It's always comfortable.
And this is a milestone episode.
Oh, yes it is.
This is 150 episodes.
Wow. And we brought everybody down with Aunt May. We celebrated by making people cry.
That's what we aim for.
That's right. We gotta switch it up. It can't always be.
Martin and I are wearing shorts on the comfy couch.
Well, you know, we can't always have toilet talk, Nick.
It can't always be sunshine and rainbows.
Well, we're always.
That's true. Very true.
Deviate every once in a while.
Oh, you've been listening to the Nerdy Legion podcast with Nick Wetmore and our guest, Mike Myers. Who I am doesn't matter. You can find Nick at Nick Wetmore. Mike is at Mike Myers Brunch. And go listen to Mike's 36 podcasts. Dude, I always forget you do like 300. Because they're all in the same feed. So I'm like, oh yeah, here's another episode. But Mike M's Week Reads, Geek Brunch Retrocast. What am I missing?
DC Monthly Spotlight.
DC
very
Monthly
rare,
Spotlight.
But there's only 3 of them episodes out.
It's the best.
Yeah, it is. It's fun. It's fun. And, of course, the show is at Nerdy Legion. Thanks for listening. Maybe next time. Maybe.